What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Fireside Giants. I'm your host, Anthony Rivardo, joined by my co-host, Alex Wilson. And today, we are here to break down, recap, and grade the Giants 2025 draft class. If you didn't know, we absolutely loved it. So we're going to be giving some high grades throughout this live stream, but also just reacting to it and discussing it now. It's been a couple days since the draft officially concluded. We want to go ahead and react to all of the picks and have a discussion with everybody in the chat. So what's up to you, Jeffrey Wheeler, saying, Scataboo! We got Sean in here. Let's go, Sean. What's up to you? What's up, Candyman? And what's up, 7th generation iPod Nano? Cool name. Just randomly saying John Mara for whatever reason. Alex, how are you doing today, my friend? Obviously, we got to react primarily to day 3 of the draft together on the live stream. But you missed night 1, and you know we kind of sprinkled in some episodes in between. But overall, a great draft class. How are you feeling about the draft class and the future of the New York Giants?
I mean, 2 days after the draft, man, I feel really, really good about where this team is now and really, really, I guess you could say optimistic. And it's been a minute since I've been able to say I'm optimistic about the Giants. But I have to say this draft class on paper, you know, we have to see them actually perform, you know, on paper was really good. And yeah, crushed multiple trays of meatballs in my mom's basement. GV, you know how it is. You know, it's a good day or a good couple days after reflecting on this draft and knowing that BPA, Abdul Carter, we're going to go through every single pick, as Anthony said. But, you know, I talked to some of my friends. I have a couple friends who are Jets fans, you know, growing up, and they did not love their draft. They liked it, but they didn't love it. And one of the biggest complaints they had was in the fourth round, they took a guy called Arian Smith, and he is a Georgia receiver who dropped 10 passes last year. He's a gadget player, and he should have been. I know a couple analysts had him pegged as a seventh rounder, even a priority undrafted free agent that they took in the fourth round. So the Giants didn't do that this year. They didn't go and get undersized players or guys that shouldn't have been drafted in places. They just went straight up BPA at most spots. Aside from Jackson Dart at 25, they just got the best players available at every single spot. And that means Abdul Carter, that means Darius Alexander, that means Cam Scataboo, and that means, of course, the rest of these guys, though, you know, Marcus Bow as well, and then some guys in the seventh round who, you know, some value pieces there. So I do think that the Giants did a really good job getting the best players available.
Yeah, I actually want to say something on the BPA versus need thing first and foremost before we really dive in and start grading some of these draft picks, because this is something that I really wanted to talk about on the channel. I was folding my laundry earlier today, reflecting on the Giants NFL draft, and I realized something. They finally did it. They finally went BPA for the entirety of a draft minus the quarterback position, which tells me, Alex, they certainly are listening to the Fireside Giants podcast. There's no way they're not, because I read two reports today. Well, number one, I came to the conclusion that they totally went BPA. But the other thing, I read a report that the Giants began to lock in on Jackson Dart in January. When did we start talking about Jackson Dart? January. That was, I think we were the first ones on the Jackson Dart train. And it started in January here on Fireside Giants. And apparently that's when it started for the New York Giants. Yeah, I'm not taking that as a coincidence. But what I want to say, digressing off that, about the BPA thing, what did I say all offseason long, Alex? The best NFL teams go BPA every single draft pick unless they need a quarterback. That is how you're supposed to draft. The only time you reach for need is when you're drafting a quarterback. Every other pick should be BPA. What was it for the New York Giants? Every single pick, BPA minus the quarterback. And the perfect example that I can bring up, and this is what I really want to highlight and get your take on, Alex. The New York Giants had a decision entering day 3 of the draft. Fourth round pick, number 105 overall. They had a choice. Do we go BPA or do we draft for need? Had they drafted for need, you know who they would have taken? Marcus Bow. Who did they take instead? Cam Scataboo. Was running back the Giants' biggest need entering day 3? No. But was he the best player available? Yes. So what was the end result? They got Cam Scataboo and Marcus Bow because they went BPA in the fourth. It allowed the board to fall a certain way. We're going BPA in the fifth, takes the player that they would have taken in the fourth. So that's the whole idea. That's why I'm always stressing going BPA and its importance to roster construction. This is the perfect prime example. And that's why finally I'm going to sit here, Alex, and praise Joe Shane, and not only for a couple good picks, but for his process. I've always complained about his process. I thought last year there was a lot of reaching for need, even though it was a great draft class. I think the years prior, they were always drafted for need. But this draft class was a BPA strategy seen through and through that allowed them to not only land a great talent in Scataboo in the fourth, but because they went with Scataboo in the fourth, They landed a great talent in Marcus Bowe in the fifth. It was a BPA draft through and through, and I can't tell you how much that excites me. BPA minus the reach for a quarterback, and that's the only time you should reach on need is quarterback. So they literally put my entire draft strategy into plan this weekend that I've been screaming all offseason long about, and that just makes me so excited because that tells me they're finally learning from their mistakes, and they're learning from the best teams around the NFL how to build a championship caliber roster.
It's absolutely true. And like Sinister Soup said, I pull my mask off and here I am, an 80-year-old man with a limp. Like, pretty exciting stuff if you're the Giants and you finally get to go and get the best players available. In the past, the Giants have kind of had to draft for need at some points because they had major holes in their roster and they had to try to upgrade at key positions. This year, they just managed to do what we always, every year, Anthony, you want to know what we do? We praise the Eagles for going BPA. We praise them for getting these guys that shouldn't be there in the fourth, fifth, third rounds. And the Giants finally had a draft of that, like that of their own, where they managed to just wait, be patient, and guys fell to them that shouldn't have been there. Marcus Bowe, obviously, lots of talent there. They're going to actually have him practicing as a right tackle to start his career. So that's a really interesting piece of information because everyone said he projects to be a right guard. The Giants have a couple guys competing at right guard, Aaron Stinney, Greg Van Roten, and Evan Neal. So they don't want to add a fourth to that mix. They want Marcus Bowe learning, and they can give him all the time in the world now, a whole season, just like Jackson Dart, to learn behind Jermaine Illuminor. And if anything happens to Illuminor, Bowe can step in and play right tackle for you if need be. You know, worst case scenario, Illuminor can even play guard. So there's a lot of options for the Giants now on the offensive line. Plenty of talent. We love to see that. And then Cam Scataboo is one of my favorite players in this draft. You know, Anthony, how many times did I talk about how badly I wanted this player? I'm so excited that the Giants got him. And the truth is that the Giants did something, not just getting BPA. They got guys naturally who are just ballers. These guys just love the game of football. They're violent men. I love me some violent men in the trenches. I love me some violent men on football teams. The Giants drafted a whole bunch of violent individuals, you know, guys that hunt cougars like Jackson Dart, Cam Scataboo. You know, he's a freaking violent man. Darius Alexander wants to hurt people. I love that about him. Abdul Carter, violent, savagery. Just great draft where you added a couple of guys who are just all football. They want to destroy people. They want to demoralize them. And that is what Giants football has been about for a long time, right, Anthony? Not recently, but their whole history is built on demoralizing opponents, destroying them, physicality, 100% effort, the days of JPP and Strahan. You know, like, these guys went all out every single play. There was no time off. The Giants have had players that have taken time off recently. Last season, it was Deontay Banks. The seasons before, Kadarius Toney. Guys didn't give 100%. The Giants drafted individuals that whether they're up 40 or down 40, they're going to kick everyone's ass. So I have to say that is a really big indication for me that this culture is taking a big, big turn. And I'm pretty excited about that. So, you know, this is a very much a optimistic perspective from myself. Lots of pauses in the chat. You know, it's a frequent occurrence here for me. If you're a Fireside Giants fan, many pauses in the chat all the time, but nonetheless, no pauses, all go for the Giants right now. Really, really good situation to be in this draft. You didn't just get good players. You got good personalities too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Giants had an identity in mind that they wanted to build for their roster this offseason, and they found that identity through this draft. Whether you're talking about Scataboo punching people in the face, or Darius Alexander, or Marcus Bowe, all of them, they bring a certain identity. Abdul Carter, of course, brings a certain identity to the New York Giants. So absolutely in agreement with you. I think it's fantastic. We're going to get to these couple of super chats that we have, and then we'll start officially beginning to grade each of the New York Giants draft picks, Alex. So Sam Fountain with a super chat. Thanks so much, Sam. Saying, for the first time after draft, I am not asking the question, why did we draft him on most of the picks? I agree with you, man. There's been many drafts in the past, especially during the Dave Gettleman era. Who was that 1 6-foot Ellerson Griffin? That was the biggest like WTF moment ever as a Giants fan. I was like, why would they draft this guy? He shouldn't have even been drafted by a single team, let alone the Giants in like the fifth or sixth round, wherever they drafted him way too early. We don't have those moments right now. Right now, all of the Giants draft picks, I'm like, yeah, I see it and I like it a whole lot. So I agree with you, Sam. It's a great draft class, feeling really positive about it. And I'm very excited after we get through these two super chats, Alex, to go ahead and start officially dropping our grades for this class.
Yeah, I appreciate the super chat. And remember the time we drafted two UNC offensive linemen that came from one of the worst offensive linemen in college football? Like, Why did we do that? Marcus McKethan is not on the team anymore. Josh Zito is on the brink of being cut. The Giants have routinely, how about Eric Gray? Where the hell is he now? You know what I mean? Like, the Giants draft players all the time in the last couple of years that literally should never have been picked. They should have been undrafted free agents. They should have been late round draft picks. We took freaking Josh Zito in the third round, guys. You know, it was a joke. Like, it was a complete joke. I don't know who was making these decisions, but the Giants finally said, well, let's go just take the best players on the board who are falling for some reason, and they should be good, you know, theoretically. And it's worked for other teams. Why wouldn't it work for us? So now the Giants get better quality prospects, and they're not reaching for players that they think are going to be good because they think they know more than everybody else. Truth is, the Giants don't know more than anybody else. They're just following the big board that most teams are in alignment with. So I do think that this is an interesting pivot. And Anthony, the best way to describe it, and Sam, you know, I think this fits right into it, is that Joe Shane, and Anthony said it before, has learned from his mistakes. And I have to give him credit for that, because it's very evident. I don't know how these players are going to pan out. I don't know if they're going to be any good or not. But one thing I can say is that Joe Shane went BPA this year and most of last year, and it's turning out to be a lot better of a strategy. And I do believe that he learned a lot of valuable lessons. So the hope is that not only did he learn those lessons, but they actually start to result in wins.
Yeah, I freaking hope so, man. Listen, I'm way more optimistic on this team than I have been in years. And I think I'm more optimistic than most of the fan base, which is really saying something, Alex, because I think I earned the reputation over the last couple of years as being more pessimistic than the majority of the fan base. So the fact that the pendulum has swung so much and I'm more optimistic than the majority of the fan base is really exciting for me, and I think means that we're probably going in the right direction. But of course, we shall see. It's a great draft class, and we're going to grade it in just a second. But that doesn't mean we're going to win more games. We have to hope it translates to the field. But Nato with a super chat, thanks so much, Nato, saying, not going to lie, Scat and Tracy going to be a wonderful duo. Absolutely, I agree with you. I have more on that later for our surprise segment at the end of this live stream that I have for Alex. Going to be more on Scat and Tracy then. So just a teaser for that, Alex. But I'm absolutely super excited about this duo. And I think that this could be the fire and ice that the Giants needed in their backfield that could be reminiscent of the one that they had in 08 and 2012. Not sure that I want to set those kind of high expectations for these boys just yet, but it's hard not to think of Jacobs and Bradshaw when you see Scataboo and Tracy in this backfield. So I'm really excited for this duo to take shape. And I think we're having some more technical difficulties from Alex. So I'll just say thank you for the super chat, Nato, and Alex will figure out his Wi-Fi once again in just a minute here. But I'm going to go ahead and kick things off grading this draft class here with Abdul Carter. We're going to go pick by pick. I'll give my grade, and then when Alex returns, he'll go ahead and give his as well. But I'm going to say this. The pick of Abdul Carter at number 3 overall is an A-plus for me. I mean, listen, Abdul Carter was arguably the best player in the draft class, according to many different scouts and analysts. Alex, can you hear me now? Maybe you can't hear me. Hello. Anyway. He'll keep figuring it out and sorting it out. Meanwhile, I'm going to keep talking about Abdul Carter.
It's better now. It's better now.
Okay. You can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. We're good.
Abdul Carter, A+. I don't think there's too much to say or too much to break down there. He's one of the best players in the entire draft class. And what I love about the Abdul Carter pick is that the Giants could have gotten cute. They could have traded down like the Cleveland Browns did and taken a Mason Graham at 5 or something like that. They could have tried to get that future first-round pick, and they didn't. They just went ahead and took the best player available. The reason being, the Giants don't have all-pro players all across the field. They don't have an all-pro edge rusher right now. Yeah, they have a couple good ones in Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns. They don't have an all-pro. They don't have an all-pro linebacker, no all-pro safety or cornerback on this defense. The only thing that they have is an all-pro defensive tackle in Dexter Lawrence. Nobody should have stopped them from taking the best player available and drafting a potential all-pro talent like Abdul Carter. No amount of draft capital should have convinced them to trade down and risk their jobs for that. So Abdul Carter at number 3 overall is an A-plus pick. He's one of the best players in the entire draft. And I think with the amount of athleticism and the talent that he has in his skill set, and the fact that he's still growing, only has 1 year as an edge rusher under his belt, just wait for him to get that NFL coaching and continue to grow his game in that regard, he has the potential to not only be one of the best players from this draft class, but one of the best players in the NFL like Micah Parsons was when he came out and played for the Dallas Cowboys as a rookie. So I love this pick. It's an A-plus pick. Again, I'm going to emphasize the fact that the Giants didn't get too cute. They just sat there, took the best player available. And as we've said, that's how championship teams are built. And this could be one of those picks that we look back on in 3 years from now and say, wow, could you imagine if we went a different direction? That would have been ridiculous, because this was a home run that changed the course of the Giants defense and franchise for several years to come. So I love the Abdul Carter pick. Can't say enough good things about it. It's an absolute A-plus for me.
Me too. I mean, if you're not giving an A-plus, then I don't really know what to say. This is one of the best prospects in the draft. Obviously, he has immense upside. And Anthony, you know, a thought came into my mind. You know, when the Giants, let's use the Giants because it's always a good example. You know, at halftime, when coaches say we have to make halftime adjustments, you know, they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, we had a tough first half. Got to make halftime adjustments. Sometimes it's hard to make halftime adjustments when you don't have positional flexibility or versatility on your team. You know, you don't have guys that can do different things. The Giants, if they go into halftime saying we need to make some adjustments, you better believe that Abdul Carter is going to be at the forefront of those adjustments. And what I mean by that is, if you're up against a running quarterback, mobile quarterback, he's going to be able to, he can play off-ball linebacker. He can be a spy. He can play off the edge. The guy has so much positional versatility that you can do so many things to create those adjustments that coaches will tell you at halftime or before the game in your you know, pregame work. So, you know, what Carter really, or rather what, you know, what Abdul Carter really does for you is he gives you a weapon that you can deploy in a number of different ways, right? It is rare that you get that. You know, it's similar in a way to Travis Hunter. He can play both sides of the ball, but it's obviously more focused on the defensive side with Carter, who is going to be able to play multiple defensive positions. And it allows you, by the way, if you're playing a mobile quarterback, you can have Kayvon, Brian Burns, and Abdul Carter on the field at the same time. And Carter can be the spy. Carter can be the off-ball linebacker. That is extremely rare. This is a player who's going to be an absolute just jack of all trades. He's going to be a Swiss Army knife for the Giants on defense. And that is an element that not many teams have. And especially with his speed, his size, you know, just his raw talent. If he starts to develop some of these pass rush moves into elite traits, elite talents, he already has that insane dip move and insane bend around the edge. The rest of it, if it comes together for him, this is going to be one of the best pass rushers in the league. And it's going to be, he's going to be able to, you know, I know he wants LT's number, which is never going to happen. He's going to have his own number retired one day, you know, if he puts that together. So like, this is an A-plus move because the potential of this young man is like something we haven't ever seen in the last decade from a draft pick for the Giants in terms of just raw upside. He has not even sniffed the surface, scratched the surface of his potential, which is really, really exciting.
Super exciting. I mean, listen, I can't wait to see his kid get on the field. And I just love his mentality, you know, and how dedicated he is to the game of football. And as we've been saying, that was a common denominator for all the Giants draft picks, Alex, a love for the game of football, whether you're talking about Abdul Carter, Scatterboo, who we're going to get to, or this next pick that I want to grade, Jackson Dart. I think that Jackson Dart was a great pick for the Giants at the end of the first round. I wrote that article, as I said, and I've brought up many times here, back in January, saying that he could be the steal of the NFL draft. Now, obviously, I was writing that predicated on the idea that I thought he would be a mid-round pick. But then later on that month, I said, you know what? I could see him going at the end of the first round, and I think he probably should, because he's got the tools, he's got the traits, and he has found success already doing what he was asked to do in the SEC, which is easily the toughest conference to play in. I think the amount of success that Jackson Dart found in that conference cannot be understated. Like, that can't be overlooked. People need to start talking about that. Because we had some players in this draft class, Alex, that we discussed many, many times. Obviously, Cam Ward was fantastic, but he played in the ACC. We're talking about Shador Sanders and how much success he had statistically at Colorado. Whole different conference and competition level than the SEC. If you play in the SEC and you succeed in the SEC, the likelihood is you could be a more successful player at the NFL level because you're playing against more pros than any other conference when you're in the SEC. So the amount of success that Jackson Dart found there, I think, is really crucial. And when you're looking at him and what he brings to the table, maybe he doesn't have any elite traits. Maybe he doesn't have elite speed. Maybe he doesn't have elite arm strength. Maybe he doesn't have the most elite accuracy or pocket presence. Okay, so he's not elite in anything. But is there anything that he's overwhelmingly bad at? No. Is there any glaring weakness in his game? I don't think so. He's just about good at everything, great at a couple things, and I think has the potential to grow into an elite player in some other traits. So I love Jackson Dart, the skill set that he brings to the table. And as I've said several times, he has the three hallmarks of a Brian Daboll quarterback. He has mobility. He has quick release. His time to throw, as I said on a recent episode, was 2.7 seconds. 2.77 seconds average, which was quicker than anybody from the 2024 draft class, which was elite. The kid can get the ball out of his hands quick. He has elite deep passing accuracy. If you want to give him an elite trait, that's the one that it is, because he was the highest graded deep passer in the NCAA last season. So those are the three hallmark traits: deep passing, quick release, mobility. He's got all three of those traits. That's why I think this is the perfect situation for Jackson Dart to grow with the perfect pairing of a head coach in Brian Daboll. I'm going to give this an A-minus pick, Alex. I think that's probably way too high for most people. I know it's higher than yours because I saw your graded draft class on ESM, but I'm going to give it an A-minus. This was one of my guys in this draft class, Jackson Dart. I singled him out very early in the process as one of my favorite quarterback prospects in the entire class. I'm glad that I saw eye to eye with Daboll on this one, and Shane. We had a meeting of minds, apparently, and we all view Jackson Dart as a potential steal. I'm really excited about this, and I'll say this about it. My grade would be lower if I thought Jackson Dart was starting in week one, or even if I thought he was starting in week five. I'd call this a C-plus grade because I'd say, you know what, they reached. But because they're going to allow him, hopefully, everything goes according to plan, because Jackson Dart is likely to sit the entirety of his rookie season before taking over, I'm going to give it an A-minus because I think this is a kid who has all the potential to grow into something special but needs a proper plan in place to allow him to grow, and the Giants actually do have that plan. So based on the process, the match for need, and the upside in talent, I'm going to give this pick, not Jackson Dart, but I'm going to give this pick an A-minus because I love the process and the plan. I see the vision with the quarterback this time. I didn't see it in 2019 with Daniel Jones. I absolutely didn't see it after they plucked him into the starting lineup in week three. I thought that was a ridiculous decision, and it proved to be. But now that I know they have a plan at quarterback and a talent that I like, I'm going to go ahead and give an A-minus. I like it. So, Alex, again, I might be a little high on it, but you know what? I'm excited. I think we've got a good direction here at the quarterback position.
Absolutely. And I want to remind everybody that quarterbacks coming out of college rarely have like what you would call an elite trait. A lot of the best quarterbacks, a lot of guys that won Super Bowls, Tom Brady, you know, just look at so many, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. These guys, Lamar Jackson had the elite trait, but, you know, Josh Allen, you could say arm strength was his elite trait. Patrick Mahomes didn't have an elite trait, you could say. What I will say is, you have to develop them in the NFL, right? Elite traits in college football mean absolutely nothing, right? Like the truth is if you can have an elite trait, but you get to the NFL and if it doesn't actually translate, that trait doesn't matter. I think that Jackson Dart's upside is substantial. And I love the fact that the Giants are giving him a year to sit and learn and wait and develop behind the scenes and learn the offense so that when he starts that game, whenever it might be, he knows the offense like the back of his hand. He has chemistry with his playmakers. Brian Daboll trusts him. He knows the audibles. He can read the line of scrimmage. He has, you know, chemistry with his offensive line and practice and whatnot. There's a lot of elements to being a quarterback that when you get stuck in there week one and you have minimal experience, you are going to struggle. Like you're going to struggle because you don't know the offense entirely. You're not comfortable in the offense entirely. You don't know your playmakers entirely. You don't know your offensive line entirely. It's just a couple of months of action and limited at that at times. I do think that when you are, you know, just Jackson Dart in the Giants situation, you find yourself in a really, really, really good one. So I love that about what the Giants have done. I give this a B because of the simple reason that the Giants needed to draft a quarterback, right? The Giants had no choice. For self-preservation alone, with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, they had to draft a quarterback, and they traded a lot of value to get one. And 25th overall isn't exactly like a complete vote of confidence in said player. Like drafting a quarterback 25 says there are flaws here. We recognize that, but we think they're teachable flaws. We think that they can be taught out of him. So I really like Jackson Dart, but I think the practice of it, just the fact that they needed to draft him, they needed to go get that player that they wanted. They only had one or two guys really on their board realistically. It was just, they had to force it, but I'm glad, Anthony, and I'll say this, and this is why, like, it's a B, but it has the upside to be an A with ease. The reason that I like this, Anthony, is that we reached for Daniel Jones at 6. You could say we reached for a quarterback this time, but at 25, you can't really call it a reach. You know what I mean? You can't really call it a reach at 25. You can call it an educated risk is what I would call it, an educated risk. And I think that the Giants made an educated risk for Jackson Dart, knowing that there's not many players that we truly think has that level of upside in this draft class, but we're going to go get the guy we think actually could get there with the right coaching and time. And they lucked into it because he's a freaking competitor, man. Like, he wants to play football. All he cares about is winning. So, like, the mental traits are there, the intangible traits, the leadership is there. And I do think that, you know, in terms of his tangible traits, he's got a good enough arm. He's a good mobile quarterback. He's a gunslinger. He is Brian Daboll to a T. The offense that Daboll wants to run, the style he wants to run, it is Brian Daboll to a T. The only thing I think he would have wished about Jackson Dart, he was a little bit more he's a little bit more girthy, a little bit thicker, so that he could be like a Josh Allen type of runner. But obviously, he's still very mobile and capable in that regard. And I do think it was an educated risk for the Giants. I do think they had to make this chance. They had to take this chance. A B is my grade, but I think it could easily be an A if you know, things go the way we want. And I do think that Jackson Dart is very capable of getting there. He just, there's a couple of things that do need to be ironed out, I would say, in his game. And we're going to see if they can do that behind the scenes without him playing a snap. So that's going to be the biggest challenge, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. That is going to be the challenge. But again, I just like the plan that the Giants have in place. And I like the fact that they did not throw a ton of value out of the window to get him, like they did with Daniel Jones at 6. That was poor value. You could have traded down, whatever. The Giants only traded away a comp pick that they got this year, number 99 overall, which, if you've been following this channel, you know that I said as soon as the Giants got that comp pick, they would not be making that pick. I knew that they were going to trade that pick, whether it was for a quarterback or if it was for a veteran on the market. There was no way that they were ever picking 99 overall. So that was a free pick that they were always going to use as a trade chip. That was very obvious to me, and I'm glad that they used it that way, and I'm glad that I was right about that. And then a future third-round pick, next year's pick, they'll recoup that one way or another. Third-round picks are so easy to recoup. It's not even funny. So, and even if they don't, oh well. So you missed out on one of your day two picks, and now you move on, and you just have to nail day three of the draft again next year. Well, they've proven that they can do that now because they did it last year and seemingly did it again this year. So we shall see. But I love the Dart pick. Maybe I'm a little high on it at an A-. I think it's got potential to be higher. I think it's got obviously a lot of potential to be a lot worse than that. It's just all about putting this plan in place and actually properly developing this talent. So let's go ahead and move on to the third round pick that the New York Giants made, which was Darius Alexander. This is an A pick for me because of the value. This is a guy that a lot of us had going to mock drafts somewhere between the 30 and 50 range. Most mock drafts did have him going in that range, in fact, and the Giants got him 15 spots later than his latest projections of around 50. Falls all the way to 65. This is one of those moments where value meets need. This is a BPA pick, but still fills a major need for the Giants on their defensive line. Darius Alexander, what you could say about him that you love, what you could say about him that you don't love. All right, well, let's start with what we love. Violence, as Alex said, girth, as Alex is trademarked for, and power on the interior, and experience. I think there's one of two ways to look at this experience thing, Alex, because a lot of people are like, oh, he's a 25-year-old rookie. He doesn't have that much room for growth and upside. Would the Giants have rather taken a 22-year-old defensive lineman who needs time to grow and develop this year, or a 25-year-old who can plug in day one and start? They went after the guy who can plug in day one and start, and that is Darius Alexander. That's why I like this pick so much. A lot of people are holding his age against him and using it as a criticism or a knock against him. I view it as a strength. I view it as a major positive for this Giants team that the defensive lineman that they drafted in the third round is going to start from day one because he's older and experienced. I think it's a positive, and maybe that's contrarian opinion. I know it's a different perspective than a lot of people have. Maybe it's a hot take, whatever. Don't care. I like the pick even more because he has age and experience. So, Alex, what's your take on that? The age and experience of Darius Alexander, and overall, how do you feel about that pick at number 65 overall?
Let me give you a really good example of why I don't care about his age. If the Giants drafted a defensive tackle who's 22 years old and he doesn't pan out and now he's 25 years old, who the hell cares? Right? Who the hell cares? Evan Neal, they drafted the kid at 21. He is now, 24, and they just declined his fifth-year option. He's now not going to be on the team after this year, most likely. Age does not matter. Like, you're betting on the player to be an impact piece, right? If they don't get to that level, if they don't earn their keep, they're going to get cut at 23. 20. We let Xavier McKinney go at 24 years old. We let Saquon Barkley go at 25 years old. You know what I mean? We let Daniel Jones, he's 26 years old. Like, these guys are young, and they are no longer on the Giants because they didn't make it, or whatever, for whatever reason they let them go and went on to have more successful careers elsewhere or not. So, you know, when it comes to Darius Alexander, this is a grown man, my friends. This is a grown-ass man that is going to play day one against Dexter Lawrence or alongside Dexter Lawrence with Abdul Carter, with Kayvon Thibodeau, and with Brian Burns. Look, Turthaler, I do agree age does matter for some of these players. But if you get 5-6 years of really solid performance out of Darius Alexander, I don't think any of us are going to be complaining. You know what I mean? His rookie contract is 4 years, so he'll be 29, right? He'll be early 29. You extend it for 3 years, 32 years old. You can still be extremely effective at 32 as a defensive tackle. And that's 6-7 years for a DT. I'm not that concerned about his, about that specific player, about that position. I'm not really concerned about the age. If it was a quarterback, I'd be like, yeah, that's freaking old. Like Tyler Shuck's 26. I'd be like, hell no. You know, I would definitely think different positions have different kind of values when it comes to the age. But I do think that Alexander being 25, he's going to step in. He is a, obviously a, you know, fully grown man, and he is going to be able to start immediately, and he's got lots of pass rush upside. He's already a really good run stopper, and the Giants needed someone to stop the run. That was really critical for them. So he is going to be an impact piece for them in the run game, and he has a lot of upside as a pass rusher, and I do believe that he'll learn a lot from Dexter Lawrence in that regard, and he could be an impact piece on day one, man. Like this defensive line, and that will lead to a conversation soon, Anthony, in a future episode where we talk about, can this defensive line, can this defense be top 10? Can they be top 5 even with Shane Bowen as their DC? So like that is a discussion for another day, but I do think it's one that we're going to have soon.
It's definitely one that we'll have, and obviously the jury is absolutely still out for Shane Bowen, but no excuses. There's plenty of talent on this defensive line. You better find a way to get 50, 60 sacks this year out of those guys, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think we're in lockstep. It's an A grade for me with Darius Alexander. He's a player who's going to make an impact from day one, and that's why I like the fact that he's older with experience rather than a 21-year-old who needs more time to grow and develop. We don't have that time to grow and develop. I want this defensive line to kick ass in 2025. Darius Alexander is going to help that happen. So before we move on to our next pick that we need to discuss, Alex, I did miss a super chat here from Zach. So Zach, thank you so much for the super chat saying, love this. Jack Saddard is freaking awesome. Definitely an A pick. Been watching Caden Priestcorn behind the scenes. What's your opinions on the tight end? So I actually saw that Priestcorn signed with the Detroit Lions. I know somebody who's close friends with Caden Priestcorn, so I'm secretly rooting for him super hard over in Detroit because he's a friend of a friend. So I really like the Priestcorn family, and I really like Caden Priestcorn as a player. I really wish the Giants would have picked him up, but they did sign or draft a tight end later on that we will discuss once we get to the 7th round picks that we're going to grade. But Caden Priestcorn, I think, has a lot of potential, and I do like the fit for him over in Detroit. So excited to see what he can do over there. But I'm in agreement with you, Jackson Dart, awesome pick. Super excited about the future and the direction of this team.
Yeah, me too. I, you know, love the comment, and obviously thank you for the super chat. Very, very generous of you. And yeah, we're going to talk about the tight end in a second. And for those asking like why we're grading the draft, we're grading the draft in the context of the pieces the Giants got for their roster right now, like real-time assessment. This is not about who they are going to be in the NFL. This is simply about how we feel they fit into the system, in my opinion. That's how I've been perceiving it.
I'm grading the process. I'm not even grading the players. I'm grading the process of these picks, I think that's which fair. Is essentially what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not grading what they're going to be in the NFL. I'm grading them for their traits. I'm grading them for them as a prospect and the fit on this team. I think that's valid. I think you can, if you're grading them for, oh, they're going to be a good NFL player, that's unrealistic. Cause like you said, or like someone said in the chat, we don't know what they're going to be in the NFL. But I think from a Giants specific perspective and kind of approach, we can look at how they fit on the team, the traits they have in our system, and kind of what holes they fill for us. So I do think it's worthwhile giving them an assessment in that regard. And really, it's not about the grade. It's really just talking about how these players fit and how these players are going to make an impact on this team, more so than the actual grade itself, which is obviously like doesn't matter because that could change. Like I said, I had to be on Dart, but it could be an A. Like it's just nonsensical to give them a grade based on what they're going to do in the NFL because it's not possible to actually figure that.
Yeah, we don't have a crystal ball. We gave Kayvon Thibodeau an A-plus pick at number 5 in 2022, and he's probably been a C pick. But the process of taking Kayvon Thibodeau 5th overall back then, that was a BPA for a premium position pass rusher. That was an A-plus process, and that's essentially what we're doing right now. We're grading the process. Taking Abdul Carter, premium edge rusher position at number 3 overall, best player in the class, that's an A-plus pick. And again, we're about to get into this next selection of Cam Scataboo, which I'm going to give an A pick as well to because of the process. He was the best player available. He was not the Giants' biggest need. He was a BPA selection. You know what? I'm actually going to go A- on this one because I'm going to stick to my guns here and say that I'm a little bit lower on Scatterboo than most fans because I don't like his lack of top end speed. But I think in terms of ugly work, receiving out of the backfield and physicality, identity, all those things, I don't know. How can you not love that draft pick, right? Like, how can you not love the Cam Scatterboo pick? I think everybody wants to give that at least an A-minus, even higher, especially when you think about the process. Think about how many draft picks at the running back position in the middle rounds do hit and do pan out. Think about the fact that the Giants recognize the strength of this draft class was defensive line and running back. So what do? They waited on those and took those positions in the middle rounds. That's what you like about it because that's a good process. Let's target the strengths of this draft class in rounds three, rounds four, and go ahead and move forward like that. So I really like the Scatterboo pick. I think he's going to be a tremendous player for the Giants, and I think that we've got a fire and ice duo in our backfield now. And again, more on that when we get to the next segment. I got a great surprise for you with that, Alex. But I love the Scatterboo pick. I know that you do too, but you know, how are you feeling about it now that we're seeing, especially after, because I know we reacted to the Scatterboo pick, but now we're reacting to it in context of getting him in the fourth and Marcus Bowe in the fifth. So how are you feeling about it?
I mean, I love Scatterboo. Like, you know this. This is a player that is all grit, all toughness, all physicality, elite contact balance, and shifty as hell. Like, yeah, he doesn't have top-end speed, and that is one of the few red flags that he does have. But this is a player that's going to run you over and then use his insane ability to stay upright. Like, he uses his hands better than I've ever seen a running back. You know what I mean? He sticks his hand in the dirt and he's able to keep his balance and then keep going. He'll pick up an extra 5, 10, 15, 20 yards, take it to the house even. And that's kind of rare. You know, it's very unique to see that. Usually, you know, guys are going down, you know, when they're hit. He does not go down. He runs you right over. So I don't really care so much about his straight line speed. I think he is very Ahmad Bradshaw-like. He's just like a rock. You hit him and you're just hitting a brick, cement, whatever wall with rebar in it. Like, it's just you're feeling the contact when you bounce off of Scatterboo. And he is going to stay upright and keep going, and he's going to deliver and deliver. You know, he has a little bit of like Ahmad Bradshaw mixed with a little bit of Jordan Montgomery in him, where like he can wear you down. You know what I mean? He will wear down a defense the entire game, and then, you know, they'll stick Tyrone Tracy in there and he'll be able to run all over you because he's a lot more shifty, a little bit different of a player. And Scatterboo, obviously such a asset out of the backfield too, as a receiver. Like, people underrate just how good he is as a receiver. Really good hands, and when he gets going, man, in the open field with one-on-one in the open field with the tackler, like, he's gonna win that battle most of the time. So I'm really, really excited about him. He is one of my favorite players. He is gonna ignite MetLife, is what I think. Like, his runs, his style is going to ignite MetLife. He's a highlight reel running back. The Giants, you mix that with Neighbors, it's just different. Like, you know, like you're saying, Scatterboo's balance is next level. Something like we haven't seen in quite a while for the Giants. I mean, Saquon Barkley had that level of contact balance, but it's a bit different. Scatterboo's style is a bit different, a little bit more physical. Saquon was a little bit more finesse based at times. And at least with us, with the Eagles, he was a little bit more power at times too. Like, he showed that power, kind of rejuvenated. But I think Scatterboo's all physicality, all power, very different style. He's not going to dance around you. He's not going to dance around the backfield. He's going to run straight at you and then stay upright. So, like, it's a very, very cool style, and one that we've been begging for since the fire and ice, you know, ground and pound, like earth, wind, and fire, you know, kind of trio we had back in the day with Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, and Ward, I believe it was. So, you know, lots of talent there. And I think the Giants are trying to recreate a lot. Honestly, you kind of see the similarities, Anthony, from what the past Super Bowl teams had to this team today. The style, the running, the physicality, the defensive line being a strength. Really interesting to see this Giants team and kind of how they're trying to remake it in that image in a little bit of a way. I don't know if you see it too like that, but it seems there are some similarities to this team in the past, but not to say that they're going to be successful. We have to actually see it before we believe it.
No, I do agree with you. I think that they're trying to recapture an identity, not necessarily forge a new one, which, you know, maybe they should be forging a new one. That's, you know, if you're pessimistic on this team, that might be your take. But I actually like that they're recapturing an identity. It's a tried and true one. It worked for the Giants back then. And I don't think that they're recapturing an identity and looking too far into the past, because I think this identity that they're building right now is one that we've seen a lot of championship teams build around currently, like the Eagles and others. So I really love this pick of Cam Scatterboo. Excited to continue talking about him and probably do a film breakdown on him on the channel soon. And I don't even think we've really discussed how great of a receiver he is. And I think his receiving ability is what makes him so damn special. So before we move on to the next pick, just want to give a big shout out to Sean. Sean says has to run to work first day back since his surgery. He'll listen to the rest of the night. Cheers, Big Blue fam. Sean, thank you so much for joining us as long as you could. Hope that you enjoy the rest of the show when you listen on later tonight. And happy to hear that you're back at work now following your surgery. And still wishing you the best of luck and best wishes with your recovery as well. So we also got a super chat here from Joe. Joe did not leave a comment in the super chat, so I'm trying to keep an eagle eye over the chat to see if you do drop anything in the chat, Joe. And maybe this was a mistake, but either way, we appreciate the super chat and thank you very much for it. And then Jaws dropped the super chat as well, saying Dart reminds me of Baker. It's a light comp. And Cam reminds me of Kyren Williams from the Rams. Bo reminds me of Zach Tom. It's just some light comps. And I don't disagree with any of those comps. In fact, I like them all quite a bit. I saw somebody in the chat drop Peyton Hillis as a comp for Cam Scataboo. That's a pretty good one as well. And for Jackson Dart, I think the Baker Mayfield comp is a pretty solid one. His ability, actually, I'll point to one play for both of these players. Jackson Dart has a play on his film. It was against Duke in a bowl game where he rolls to the left. I think you know the one I'm talking about, Alex. He rolls to the left, plants his feet, and then rips a pass on a rope about 50 yards downfield. It's an absolute dime between a defender and the sideline. I think you know the exact play that I'm talking about. That is the play, essentially one for one, that got Baker Mayfield drafted first overall because he used to roll to the left, plant his feet, and then rip. Some quarterbacks are better when they're rolling to their right and they have their body going into them, right, and they're not throwing against their body. Other quarterbacks just roll to the left and they're able to throw their whole shoulder into it and really put some velocity on it, rolling left like Baker Mayfield. That's like his signature move, and like Jackson Dart. So I think it's a pretty good comp there. I like all these comps. I think they're all some pretty good comps, Jaws. You know, obviously comp is for playing style, not for ceiling. We'll see what these players become at the next level, but so far so good. I really like the comparisons and I really like the level of talent and the playing styles of all of these prospects. So appreciate the super chat and really like the comparisons to NFL players that you dropped in it.
Absolutely. Appreciate the super chat, my friend. And yeah, like if Dart could be anything like Baker in his intensity and his style, his gunslinging mentality, we would love that. You know, Baker Mayfield, when he's on, is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And I think that's a pretty accurate take, Anthony. I think you'd probably agree with that. When Baker's feeling good, he is unstoppable at times. And I love his running style too. Like he'll run you over for a first down. Dart is like that sometimes. And honestly, to a fault, like it's sometimes not good because he leads with his right arm. And I remember watching the Gruden kind of quarterback show, and he was like, you cannot do down the NFL, you have to go out of bounds. Like you have to get out of bounds because those guys will murder you. Like those guys will actually, these aren't college defenders anymore, these are all pro linebackers. They're gonna hurt you. So Dart has to be a little bit smarter with his decision making. I know he's super competitive and wants to run people over. We watched Josh Allen do it too, and sometimes he does it and he gets hurt doing it. So you know, I think that Dart has to be smart, preserve himself, live to see another day. But at the same time, you know, Cam and Kyren Williams, if Cam Scataboo becomes Kyren Williams, I will be so freaking happy. I love Kyren Williams. He is a red zone freaking animal. The guy scores every red zone touch he gets. And ultimately, you know, if Scataboo can be like that for the Giants, we're going to score a lot of freaking points and pick up the extra yards. I think his contact balance might even be better than Kyren Williams, to be honest. But I do love Kyren. I do think that he is a tremendous player and he's tough as nails too. So very similar mentalities. And I do think that's something that plays a big part in being a running back, not scared of contact. You welcome it. That's going to be a big game changer for the Giants, and linebackers are going to be like, I got to freaking tackle this guy again and again and again, and it's going to get in their head, and then psychologically, it opens up your whole offense and the play action too. It's gonna be a fun offense to see in real time, especially with Russell Wilson, who is, I'm going to say it again, guys, and Anthony, you're in the same boat as me. We forget what it's like to have at least an average competent quarterback because Daniel Jones has been so freaking bad for so many years. We don't even remember what it's like to look decent at quarterback. Russell Wilson is going to be decent, and it's going to feel like a freaking different universe that we're in. That's what we're about to experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we did get a flash of decent quarterback play on this one fateful day against the Indianapolis Colts last season that screwed us out of the first overall pick in Cam Ward. But hey, here we are following the NFL draft, and I don't even feel so bad about Drew Lock having his lifetime performance in that game because I like the way that the Giants draft unfolded, which is why I always say it actually doesn't matter where you're picking. It matters what you do with your damn picks. If we're picking first or we're picking third, it's not a big difference. And if you actually look at the history of number one overall picks, Alex, most of them don't pan out because they don't go in the best situation. So you know what? I think we can all apologize to both Tommy DeVito. Alex definitely owes him an apology. I think we could apologize to Drew Locke. We could say, hey, it is what it is. You played a good game. You had a good time. And now we have a bright future anyway. So it's just all about where you, what you do with the picks whenever you are picking rather than where you are picking. So, all right, John Kirk with a super chat as well. And then we'll get back to grading the rest of these picks, saying we are going to have an Ole Miss quarterback, a great defensive line, and power and lightning backfield. This is back to the future. I absolutely love that. I think we could even make a sticker out of that if we wanted to, Alex, back to the future. And maybe it's Eli Manning at Ole Miss and Jackson Dart in a Giants uniform or something like that. I think that could be really cool. So, yeah, really exciting. Again, we're recapturing something, but I don't feel like the Giants are thinking too backwards either. Like, this is back to the future, but I think that their process is just the tried and true method. It worked for them back then. It worked for the Eagles recently, right? So, like, this is a good process, and it is back to the future. And I know a lot of times Giants fans say, hey, let's make a new future. Like, let's not go back to the future. But I actually think in this regard, the Giants are doing both at the same time, if that makes sense. So really excited. And I love Jackson Dart, man. I'm so happy that he's on the New York Giants.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited about it. And John, appreciate the super chat. It is like going back to the future. That's exactly how I would put it. And I think the Giants, like I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, is that they've lacked an identity, and I think they've just rediscovered it. The question is, we had Steve Spagnuolo during those days, you know, when we had that identity. Now you have Shane Bowen, a little bit different of a caliber of coach. So I think that you have to, I'm tempering my expectations because I'm not so sure Bowen knows how to deploy weapons like this. But I will say this, Anthony, and I'll say this very, very clear. If Shane Bowen absolutely craps the bed, the Giants defensive coordinator position is going to be one of the most sought after in football. So I don't think that the Giants and Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are feeling like, oh, you know what? We're in a bad spot. If Shane Bowen blows chunks, you fire him, and you, in 2026 rolls around, you're going to have your pick of the crop of the best defensive coordinator options on the marketplace. So I'm not really concerned about it. This is realistically 2025 is a bridge year. It is a bridge year to Jackson Dart. So if Shane Bowen blows, you fire his ass to the sun, trebuchet style, and you go and get the best defensive coordinator on the market, and you feel pretty good about where you're going in the future. That's kind of how I feel about it. So, you know, at the very least, you're looking at a situation where Bowen's probably going to go because he's not one of the best DCs in the league. But if he does pan out and things get better, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now. He's got a chance to figure his stuff out, but I think his leash is going to be pretty short, to be honest.
I think it should be. I think the leash should be short for everybody in this Giants front office and coaching staff. I mean, they got to figure it out. No excuses. So short leash for everybody. But I'll say this. You said Bowen better figure out how to deploy these weapons. You got to be a goddamn idiot not to know how to deploy these weapons. Like, seriously, you can't figure out what to do with Abdul Carter, Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns, Dexter Lawrence, Darius Alexander. Like, come on. There's a lot of talent on the defensive line. All you have to do is this. Hey, line up and go after the quarterback. Okay, good game plan. That's it. That's all you got to do. You got to be an idiot to mess this one up. So I think this defensive line might just be idiot proof, but Shane Bowen could absolutely prove me wrong. We shall see. Anyway, let's go on to the fifth round pick that we haven't yet discussed. And then, of course, we have the two seventh round picks, which I think we'll do together for the sake of time. But this fifth round pick is one that we absolutely do love, Alex. It's Marcus Bowe out of Purdue. It's a guard prospect that we talked about a lot. I had him in mock drafts back in like February that I was writing on ESM. Going in the third round to the New York Giants. And then when the fourth round was rolling around, I was like, you know what? The Giants could totally take him out of need right here in the fourth round. We'd all be happy. Instead, they go BPA with Cam Scataboo. And then because they did that, they were able to go BPA again in the fifth. And that happened to fit a need because it was Marcus Bowe who ended up falling a whole extra round. This is the Giants' best value selection of the draft class. It's a player who many thought could go in round three. They get him all the way down in round five. And not only that, Alex, I think he could start games for the Giants this year. More on that when we get to our surprise segment for you. But I love this pick. This is probably my favorite pick that the New York Giants made in terms of value. And again, it really highlights their strategy of going BPA in this year's draft class. They went BPA in the fourth, and it allowed them to get Bowe in the fifth. Had they taken Bowe in the fourth, they would not have gotten Scataboo. They would have gotten a lesser running back prospect if they even got one. BPA is always the move. It's the way to go. And you're right. They did pull in Eagles, going BPA in the fourth with Scataboo and landing Bo in the fifth. Love this pick. Yes, there's some question marks about his arms and the length of them. I don't care at all about his arm length. He's a good football player. Put him out there. Watch his quick feet get to work and watch him make some damn plays on the offensive line. He's exactly what the New York Giants needed. This feels very reminiscent of when the Chiefs drafted Trey Smith in the fifth round many years ago. So I love this pick. I hope that he has that same career path. I'm not saying that he will, but just love the value of the selection. My favorite pick of the draft for the Giants in terms of value, it's an A pick for me as well.
Yeah, I agree. And Marcus Bowe is going to be an interesting player because what he thrives in is pulling out, you know, to the second level and outside zone stuff. And he's really good at just getting to the linebackers. And he's really good at run blocking with his feet and his agility and athleticism. He's a super superb athlete. So what I do think is that if the Giants are going to be running a run heavy system at times, depending on the opponent, depending on whatever they're going to be doing, he's a really good option for them. You know, if he gets better in pass protection, because he does lack size, he's only 300 pounds. I think that he plays bigger than that, though. He plays with more power than his frame really dictates. If he can add a bit more size to his frame, I think he's going to be a really, really good player for the Giants. And he, again, like Dart, has a whole season to figure it out. And the best thing about it, Anthony, is that if Marcus Bowe doesn't figure it out, the Giants have more than enough money to go sign the best possible right tackle on the market. Let's say there's a right tackle available in the first round in next year's draft, and it's a really freaking good one, like a Marcus Mbau, Armand Mbau, like the Jets just got. And they're sitting there like, well, this is really good right tackle guy, and we have a Jackson Dart as our quarterback. Like, you can just go take the best player available if that's naturally what happens and solve a need. So I do think that the Giants have plenty of resources and a fifth round pick for Bowe. Or Bo, rather, sorry. He doesn't actually, Bo, I was kept saying Marcus M. Bow over the past couple weeks. So Marcus Bo. But, you know, if the Giants feel as though he can be a starter and he's got steel upside, right, they're going to give him this whole year to develop. And at some point, if Illuminor has to miss any time, I bet you he'll get the first chance to play. Now, if he doesn't play, that's okay, because he'll get a chance to compete during training camp, show what he can do in 2026, and win that job outright. And if it doesn't work out, they can always have him cross-train at right guard too, where his arm length won't be as much of an issue. And actually, some people think, Anthony, hot take, not many people are talking about this, some people think that he could actually be a center in the NFL. So that's another thing to consider, that if he was... So if he, because his size actually is perfect, his feet, his ability to get out there in the run game, I actually wouldn't be surprised if they did not train him at guard and they actually trained him at center if right tackle didn't work out. So that's another thing to throw into the mix here. Keep an eye out for that. Like, if right tackle's not working out for him, keep an eye on center, because the truth is that John Michael Schmitz has a lot to prove and he's not done a lot of it lately. So I do think that they need another option there. And Bo could be someone that they train there in the future. So just going to put that out into the universe, and we'll see what happens down the line. But obviously, best case scenario, he learns, he develops, he grows, he, you know, becomes a really solid player right tackle, and he assumes the role in 2026 and takes over for Jermaine Illuminor, who we love to death. Great Giant, love him. And I would even consider keeping him if the price was right. But assuming he leaves, I would love to have Bo be that guy that takes over long term, and we get a steal in the fifth rounds, and the Giants finally hit on one of those players that everyone's like, why is he still here?
Yeah, I think he's ultimately going to slot in at guard long term, and I actually don't think it's going to take him long to take that job over. We'll talk more about that in my surprise segment, but I really like Bo, and what I really think is exciting about Marcus Bo, Alex, the big knock on people that people have on him. So his biggest strength is his agility and his quick feet and his ability to get into his kick step real fast and then get into his pass sets extraordinarily quickly. That was allowing him to anchor and lock down opposing edge rushers with ease, basically because of his quick feet. The biggest knock that people have is like, oh, the people in the NFL are faster. That's not going to translate. Says who? It very well might translate. He just might be that quick. He just might have that much of an elite first step out of his stance and his kick slide to be that good at right tackle at the next level. Totally possible. Or that agility, it's going to translate to guard too. We talked about Becton and we've talked about other guys and how they pull for the Eagles and how they pull for all these other outside zone teams like the Rams and the 49ers. This is a guy who fits in perfectly with those offenses. And newsflash, guys, these are the best offenses in the NFL. So love the process here. Love the selection. He moves differently than most tackles. Yeah, he probably falls into guard because his arms are a little bit short. However, I don't think it makes a difference. Marcus Bowe, one of the best picks of the NFL draft, not just of the Giants draft class, but of the entire NFL draft. So we got a couple super chats here, and then we'll knock out these seventh round picks, and then I'll hit you in the face with my surprise segment, Alex. But we got a super chat, big one here from Joe. Thanks so much, Joe. Second super chat of the day. Joe saying, drafting Scat in the fourth when Bowe was an option, but got him in the fifth. Feels like when we took Schmitz in the second and Hyatt was an option, got him in the third, and we loved those picks. Hoping Scat and Bowe work out better. It does feel that way. That's a really good comparison, in fact. So I'll praise you for making that comparison because that is really solid. And yeah, I really hope that it works out better than it did for those guys. But what I will say about the Schmitz and Hyatt picks, I think the talent was there. The value in the process was all right. Like we agree with that. I think the coaching and the situation has been the issue. As I've said with Schmitz, I think the quarterback position actually really harmed him because they pretty much asked him to go out there and be a veteran center as a rookie. Like he started immediately and he was asked to do a lot of the protection calls. And when he wasn't doing the protection calls, Daniel Jones was effing up the protection calls. That's been a problem. And I think Russell Wilson's going to make not only Schmitz a better player because of those protection calls and adjustments that Russell Wilson can make at the line of scrimmage, but he's also going to make Hyatt a better player if Hyatt sees the field because he can actually hit the ball downfield with timing and accuracy on the deep passes. So for me, with those guys, Schmitz and Hyatt, they were the right selections at the time, and it was good process to take them, but they were just placed into a bad football team in a bad situation that didn't know how to utilize their skill set or maximize their growth and development. And now hopefully that the roster has changed a little bit of different management and different personnel on the roster, I think that we could actually see these guys play a whole lot better this year and maybe eventually be late bloomers and pan out. I think it's totally possible. But yeah, I agree. It's a similar comparison. Definitely hoping it works out better for Scat and Bowe. I want them to make an impact from year one. But I just don't want to rule out the late blooming projection for Schmitz and Hyatt because I still see the talent with them. They've had their flashes. I just think it's been a bad situation for them. Let's see if they can turn it around now. And because I think it's a better situation for them now is why I think it's a really good situation for Scat and Bowe to step right into. So really excited about these picks and really good comparison. And thank you so much, Joe, for the super chat.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Joe. Really, really generous. And I do think that when you're looking at like JMS and Hyatt, like you said, Anthony, JMS was never touted for his size. He was touted for his IQ. Like he was touted for his football intelligence, his ability to read what was happening and then relay that to the quarterback. When you're relaying it to a dead cat, you're probably not going to have much success on offense. So Russell Wilson, a little bit more than a dead cat. He's alive at least. And I think that if you're JMS and you're relaying that information and you're able to, you know, at least offer something to Russ, I think it's going to be a big difference. I think he's going to have a lot more success. But at the same time, the offensive line for the Giants, the injuries, man, the lack of consistency, the different names, that first rookie season for JMS set him back years, like literally set him back. I mean, not only did he get hurt, but he had a different offensive guard playing next to him every single week. Every single freaking week. I can't even remember the names of all of them. It was so, so bad. And last year they had injuries galore as well. I mean, running got hurt and they had, you know, how many players at right guard? And I mean, actually it wasn't right guard. It was more so at left guard and then left tackle, but right guard actually was locked down by Greg Van Roten the whole season. So I do think that when you're looking at JMS as a player, it was intelligence that was always what his biggest trait was. It was never his size or his strength. So Russell Wilson and JMS, I think actually might fit pretty well because you're talking about two guys who, one guy who understands how to operate, another guy who predicates his whole game on being intelligent and positioning and everything about that. So this offensive line should be better in theory. I mean, Greg Van Roten, the year of experience next to JMS should be also a good thing. So we'll see what happens there in terms of if Greg Van Roten wins that right guard spot. But, you know, Jalin Hyatt was a scheme specific player. He never fit the offense because the quarterbacking and the offensive line were never good enough. He came from Tennessee from an air raid offense that was supposed to be downfield oriented, speed, deep shots. That was the whole reason they drafted Hyatt. What have they not done over the last 2 years? Take shots downfield because they didn't have the quarterback to do it, and they didn't have the offensive line protection to do it. So Hyatt's been a complete waste of space. This year, I think we could see more value from him. As you know, obviously, assuming everything goes to plan, I think Hyatt will have his best year this season because the truth is like this system actually fits him now. Like he fits in the system now with a better offensive line, hopefully barring injury. And Russell Wilson, one of the best deep ball passers in the NFL, like elite deep ball passer. Hyatt should be better. So they were drafting players that simply were for a specific fit, and they just did not actually fit anymore because of the situation the Giants went through. Cam Scadabout, like this is a player who's going to be, he's kind of a one size fits all. Like he can fit most systems. And Marcus Bowe, you know, we're talking about fourth and fifth round picks, not even second, third round picks now. Like these guys are not supposed to be impact pieces on day one. Scadabout will be, and Bowe has the opportunity to sit and learn. And I think that it's even a better situation for the Giants. This is a good spot for the Giants to be in. I think you make a lot of really good points, and I think that Scat and Bowe will make a much more impactful impact, I guess you could say, than JMS and Hyatt did in their first two seasons. I do think that Scatable especially will have a much bigger impact than those two guys as a rookie.
I agree with you, and I can't wait for you to learn how to say these guys' names properly. Just poking fun at you. Don't really care.
I just like Scadaboo. It just sounds better. Scadaboo. I just like Scadaboo. But yeah, Bo sounds cool.
It's Scadaboo. I like Scadaboo. Because A, that's how his name is pronounced. And also B, you go boo. That's fun. Anyway,
Bear 3. Booing Scadaboo every time.
Yeah, but it's a fun boo. It's like when everybody would go cruise and everybody thought that the stadium was booing, but no, we were just saying cruise. Anyway, Bear 315, thank you for the super chat saying Tracy, Cam, Scadaboo, and Turbo plus Devin. How do you like our running back group? What's their ceiling? I think the ceiling is really high for this running back group. I like the committee that they've formed. I think they've got a lot of talent. They've got upside with Scadaboo and Tracy, and they've got veteran experience with Singletary. We'll see if Singletary ends up getting traded later on this year, maybe in spring or in training camp in the summer, totally possible. But it's a really good group, and they should not have any problem running the ball this year. Unless the offensive line absolutely collapses with injuries, this running game should be a focal point. I think the Giants are going to be a run-first team this year, in fact, because of how much depth they have in their running back room. So really like it. I think it's a very high ceiling.
I do as well. And, you know, they have Devin Singletary, who's kind of your RB3 now, which is a really good situation to have because he's experienced at the very least. Like, he knows how to operate. This is a young group. Lots of upside, lots of physicality, and even some, you know, receiving qualities. There's just so much untapped potential. I love a running back room with untapped potential. And that's kind of where the Giants are heading into the 2025 season, looking at is a group that needs an opportunity. And I'm pretty excited about that. So, you know, Tracy, we love, needs to clean up some of the fumbles, needs to clean up some of the drops. Scadabo, who obviously has so much upside, and we're super excited to watch the physicality, the grinding mentality, lots to love there. And then Singletary, who can just be that veteran experienced guy in the locker room to help those guys and push them along and get paid for it. So not a bad situation to be in. If you're Devin Singletary, you don't have to get hit and you get paid anyway. So not bad for him. But appreciate the super chat, Bear. Definitely very excited about this offense in terms of like just the upgrades we made. I'm not expecting them to be like elite by any means, but I'm expecting them to at least be competent. And that's a far cry from what we've seen over the past couple of years.
Absolutely. Far cry for sure. So competency would be fantastic for this Giants offense. But all right, let's go ahead and grade these seventh round picks. And then we do have one more super chat remaining, but let's go through these seventh round picks real quick. Then the super chat, then the surprise segment, the seventh round picks. Correct me if I mispronounce a name now, but Thomas Fedoni, is that how you say it?
I think that's right. How you say it. Sounds Italian, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thomas Fedoni II was once regarded as a high recruit tight end prospect coming out of high school, even above Brock Bowers as a recruit. Mm-hmm. ACL injuries absolutely plagued his collegiate career, caused him to fall down the boards. He's a seventh round pick, borderline undrafted. But I think this is a good selection for the New York Giants with good value because clearly he's got football talent and the upside is there. Injuries just held him back. So I give this a C+. I don't think this is something that's going to blow your hair back, you know, and be like, oh my God, what a steal. But this is a nice developmental piece. I think sometimes what you can do in these late rounds, Alex, is find guys who either went to smaller schools or were overlooked in their career due to injuries, still have the talent and the upside, but for one reason or another were overlooked or weren't able to reach their potential. And now you hope that just something clicks for them. It all falls into place. And then they reach their potential with your team in the NFL. And I think that's exactly what you're getting with Thomas Fedoni, a player who, again, had a lot of talent coming out of high school, just didn't have the luck that he needed. So, you know, like just with some bad luck on injuries, it derailed his progress. And maybe now with the New York Giants, he's able to get back on track and everything clicks. He stays healthy and boom, maybe he continues his development and becomes a pretty decent and competent player for the New York Giants. Totally possible. So I like this pick. I'll give it a C+. We'll see ultimately how it goes in the future. His development is going to be one to track, but I also think that one of the potential reasons the Giants did take him is because he can also contribute as a pass blocker. I saw, according to PFF, he was one of the highest pass protectors at the tight end position last year. So really like this Fidoni pick, Alex. And then of course we've got the other seventh round pick, but real quickly, how are you feeling about Thomas Fidoni, the tight end, who had a very high mark coming out of high school?
Yeah, higher than Brock Bowers. And I think C+ is fair for him, B- C+, like in that realm. And if he didn't have multiple ACL injuries, it'd be much higher than that. But I do, and also he probably would have been a much higher drafted prospect. But the injuries obviously bring his stock down quite significantly. But this is an interesting player, right? He's a huge guy. I think he's like 6'6", massive wingspan, big hands. He can catch the ball. He can block. Like there's a lot. I think he's going to replace Daniel Bellinger between you and I. I think that he'll, you know, that's not unrealistic to think. I think Bellinger's days are probably numbered, unfortunately. He just hasn't taken those developmental steps. I think that Fidoni could win that job, that TE2 job alongside Theo Johnson. So that would be a position battle I'm going to watch this training camp, is Bellinger versus Fidoni. And even so, like he can be a practice squad guy. Worst case scenario, he ends up in the practice squad. He's a traits dude. He's got some good traits, and I know the knee injuries are concerning. So that's kind of why I'm giving him a C+, B-, but hell, like let's be wrong on that one. You know, going out and getting a guy with that much talent and upside, never a bad move in the seventh round. That's the type of player you take a flyer on in the seventh round to begin with. So I don't hate the pick at all. I just am very cautious of what he can actually bring to you, because the knee injuries are concerning and you just never know when another one's going to happen with a guy that's already done it twice. So that's what brings his grade down for me. It's just the injuries, but nonetheless, don't hate the idea of taking a guy with some really good upside in the seventh and see what you got.
Yeah. And just to note this, I think this is pretty exciting. He was projected as a fifth round pick according to NFL.com. So obviously landing him in the seventh is really good value, and it's another BPA pick. So I'll praise the process. I'm going to give it a C+ just because he is an injury prone seventh round prospect. But honestly, maybe, you know what, I'm going to bump it up to a B-, whatever. I'm feeling good and positive, and I love what the Giants did. So B- for me with Thomas Fidoni, and hopefully he far exceeds the expectations of where he was drafted. And I hope the same thing for the final pick that we're going to discuss, which is Oklahoma State cornerback Corey Black, who has elite speed, ran a 4.35 second 40-yard dash at his pro day, a player that the Giants did in fact meet with in a top 30 visit. I thought he was going to go much earlier. I thought this was going to be about a fifth or sixth round pick, but I did single out in our what the Giants are going to do in the draft based on their top 30 visits mock draft. I said, look at Corey Black and some of these other guys that the Giants had top 30 visits with. It seems like they're going to focus on defensive depth on day three of the draft, and that is ultimately what they ended up doing here in the seventh round, adding a nice depth piece with high upside and great athleticism in Corey Black with their final draft pick in the seventh round. So really like this selection. He's an experienced player with a lot of starting experience, had 38 starts, I believe, in his career, and he has special teams experience, which is where I think he immediately plugs in and makes an impact for the New York Giants as a rookie, is probably as a gunner on special teams with his 4.35 speed and solid tackling abilities as well for a cornerback. And then again, has those tools and traits to develop as a potential depth cornerback for this Giants secondary. So I actually really like this pick. This one I give a B2 as well. And yeah, rounds out of what is just a stellar NFL draft class in 2025 for the Giants.
Yeah, I like the Corey Black, selection. And another thing that you may not even know, he was a captain the last 2 years. So this is another really high, you know, effort guy, locker room leader, someone that can be a special teams contributor on day one, someone that was some just developmental upside, some depth. I like that. You know, they're getting some high culture guys in the seventh round, and you can't hate that. You can't hate high culture guys, high effort guys. I mean, damn, man, it takes a lot to come back from two ACL tears. So I'll tell you what, you got to have a lot of effort, a lot of respect for the sport to do that. So I think the Giants overhauled their whole culture this draft and this offseason, really. Javon Holland's a big addition to the secondary and free agency. Paulson Adebo, really good individuals, guys that are going to bring a lot of leadership to this. So overall, this draft for me, it was definitely an A. Just on average, I think A minus A with ease, upside for A plus. Like on paper, this is a really good draft. This is a really solid group of players. It really will come down to the coaching. These players have all the talent in the world. It's going to come down to the coaching for me, and it'll come down to the foundation they build around them, and the consistency and the discipline, and winning football games. You know, it's really easy to develop players when you're winning football games. Why do you think the Chiefs hit on like everybody? How do you think the Eagles hit on everybody? Because they win football games, and these players learn what it's like to win. These players learn what it means to win and how to win and the effort it requires to win, the discipline it requires to win. The Giants have been teaching players how to lose recently, and that is not how you want to develop talent. So as long as the Giants can win football games, be competitive, our players will have a much better shot at developing into very good contributors down the road and in the near term. So pretty excited about this draft class, but it's going to come down to winning football games and teaching them what it requires to be a successful NFL player.
Absolutely. Yeah, potential's there. Overall, I'm going to give this an A for the draft class. I love this draft class. We have to see how it pans out in the future. I think I give an A to the draft class of 2023, and so far it's probably been about a C. But you know what? Still, I love the process. I love the selections. Just got to hope the development and the progress is there and that it ends up panning out the way that we hope it would. So I'm locking in an A. Alex, what grade are you locking in for the whole draft class?
Yeah, I think I'm going A minus. Like, I think that's a fair, like, I'd leave a little bit of room for upside. So maybe A minus, sure. Just so I can get to an A plus.
There we go. So before we move on to my surprise segment that I keep teasing here that I have for Alex, super chat from Zach. Thank you so much, Zach, saying blue about to look like Penn State of NFL thoughts. So my immediate thought is I hope our locker room is nothing like Penn State's, because for years and years, Penn State has been plagued by locker room allegations and controversies, is how I'm going to delicately put that. So hopefully we don't have the Penn State locker room, but if we have the Penn State talent with guys running that smash mouth football, superstar defensive pieces all over the place, hell yeah, man, I'm all there for it. So, you know, I mean, Penn State's had a lot of big players come out in recent years, Abdul Carter being one of them. And I hope that Abdul Carter steps onto the New York Giants and makes that immediate impact, similar to what Micah Parsons out of Penn State did for the Dallas Cowboys. It's a comparison that everybody likes to make, but also you can make comparisons to other edge rushers who've come out in recent years. I think Will Anderson Jr. This is actually a great comparison, Alex. The Houston Texans were able to turn things around immediately in year one when they drafted C.J. Stroud, but not just because they drafted C.J. Stroud. They landed C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. in the same first round of the draft. Both of those players were impactful and helped them go to the playoffs. The Giants just drafted their version of Will Anderson and Abdul Carter and their version of C.J. Stroud, hopefully, and Jackson Dart. So this turnaround for the New York Giants, I know Dart's probably not going to play much this year, but it could be a quicker turnaround than people think. If he's ready to go by the second season of his career, he could step in and have immediate success then. And we could be talking about this Giants team. Let's say they make a lot of progress this year with Russell Wilson as the bridge quarterback. When we go into 2026, we could be talking about this Giants team as one that we foresee playoff expectations for. It's totally possible. So this could be a very instrumental draft class, could be a pivotal one that turns things around, or could be 2023 all over again, but we shall see. But anyway, really appreciate the super chat, Zach, and super excited for the direction of this team. And, you know, you're kind of mentioning Penn State here. I think Penn State does have a clear identity on the football field. And I think the Giants are finally starting to get their identity back on the football field as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if the Giants can have as successful as a program as Penn State does every single season in terms of just being competitive, having top prospects every single year, that would be great. You know, that would be awesome. So in that respect, absolutely. I'm looking forward to what this season holds. And my hot take right now, Anthony, is that one of Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston, I think probably Jameis Winston will be traded at some point in 2025. That's my hot take right now. And I think that Jackson Dart will assume the QB2 role. A team is going to need a quarterback. Something's going to happen. And the Giants have two guys who can start. And I think it's probably going to be a team like, for, I don't even know, maybe like, I'm trying to think of a team that like really could use a player now. We'll get there when it gets, maybe the Saints.
That'll come down to injuries.
Yeah, it'll come down to injuries.
Obviously, like, have Jameis too. I do think if right. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Like, if somebody gets hurt around the league, Jameis is like the ideal guy that you trade away since he's
exactly
a quarterback anyway.
So Dar will end up assuming a QB2 role anyway at some point. That's my hot take right now. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel. So maybe they would leverage a guy like Jameis for a late round pick, you know, sixth or something like that, just to recoup some value for some money, essentially. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel right now. But yeah, what's your special segment? I'm curious.
My special segment. I've done this segment with you once before, but I'm going to make this a regular thing now on this channel. I've mentioned this many times. I'm a huge fan of the Rich Eisen Show, and every Monday they do Overreaction Monday on the Rich Eisen Show. So we're going to do our own version of Overreaction Monday, but it's going to be catered to just the New York Giants NFL draft class. You ready to go? All right. So the first overreaction that I have for you. The Giants just drafted an absolute stud running back in the fourth round this year after drafting a stud running back in the fifth round last year. So my hot take here is the Giants will have 2 1,000 all-purpose running backs on their roster this season. 1,000 yards all-purpose, two of them this season with Tyrone Tracy Jr. and Cam Scadaboo. Is that an overreaction?
That's an interesting honestly, I think about that one. I could see Tyrone Tracy having 400-500 receiving yards this year and Scadaboo having 800-850 rushing yards and maybe 150. It's possible. I'd say it's a slight overreaction. I'd say it's probably an overreaction. I'd say probably an overreaction, but I would love to see it not be.
Let me push back. Let me make my case. We had Tyrone Tracy Jr. with 1,123 yards from scrimmage last year. He had 284 receiving, 839 rushing, and he only started 12 games. That was 5 weeks of the season that he was a backup. In 12 games, he ended up going for 1,100 total scrimmage yards, and this was an offense that sucked and couldn't stay on the field last year. So I think that if this offense is better, they have somewhat of a passing game. I could see Scadaboo going for at least 300 receiving yards. I could see Tracy going for at least 200 receiving yards and maybe a good mix of rushing for both of them. I'm going to, like I said, I'm making the case. I know it's a hot take. I know it's a little bit tough to project this kind of thing, but I think it's totally possible the Giants could have two running backs go for over 1,000 all-purpose yards this year, and I'm super excited about this duo.
I could see Scadaboo flying past 1,000. Flying past. I could see him having 1,200 yards this year. I think that he's going to be a workhorse.
Who do you think is the lead back there? Do you think that Tracy remains a starter? Or do you think Scadaboo is going to become the starting running back?
I think that it's going to be left up to training camp. I think that they'll have an open competition for it. But if I was to guess, I mean, Tracy looked good last year. I liked what he showed us last year. But Scadaboo, he has the ability to change a game. You know, he has the ability to just really be a dominant piece in an offense. I think that Scadaboo wins the starting job, but Tracy's heavily involved. I could see it being a 15 carries for Scadaboo, 10 carries for Tracy, or 10 touches, 15 touches type of work split. That's kind of how I see it. But I think that's ideal because then you keep both those guys healthy and you keep them both in a situation where they can play a lot of snaps, but also not be beat up a lot. So that dual threat is what good teams are doing these days, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not like it's outside of the realm of possibility to have 2,000 yard all-purpose backs in the backfield. Look at the Detroit Lions, right? I mean, they've got it. Obviously those are two incredibly talented players there, but who knows? This is the point of Overreaction Monday, is to put out really hot takes and see if we can get there. But no, I think it's possible. I do think it's possible. And I'll add more context to it. Devin Singletary only started 5 games last year and only played in 15. He had 556 yards. I think Scadaboo and Tracy, they're both going to see the ball more and with more efficiency and success. I think there is a chance. I'll say this. They're both going for at least 800 yards in my mind. 1,000 is probably pushing it, but that's why I set the marker there. But I don't know. I think it'll be fun to see if this one shapes out. Let's check back in this time next year on that one. But second overreaction for you. I've got 3 of them, so we're getting to the halfway point. But second overreaction, Alex. Marcus Bowe will start at least 8 games for the New York Giants this season.
I think that's an overreaction just based on, I think Jermaine Illuminor is your right tackle unless he gets hurt. right? I think if he gets hurt, then yeah, of course, Bo will get playing time. But if he doesn't get hurt, I don't think so. I think Greg Van Roten will play, will probably win the starting right guard job, and he will have a second season starting there. And at least the Giants will have a consistent right side of the offensive line, unless Greg Van Roten absolutely stinks, and that's a different story. But I do think that Bo is a developmental piece this year, and he is a last resort. Like, you don't want him playing. You want him learning, developing, growing, physically and, you know, mentally, and for the 2026 season primarily. So I think it's an overreaction.
All right, that's fine. I don't think it's an overreaction. I think that it's going to happen. I think Bo is going to, there's going to be some sort of injury at right guard or right tackle, whichever one. Bo's going to get in there. He's going to play well, and he's going to take one of those starting jobs, and he's just never going to look back. That's how I feel. I'm really high on Bo. Obviously, like I said, I had him as a third round pick in this year's class. Would have been comfortable taking him there. They got him in the fifth. I think it's a third round talent. And honestly, usually third round talents, top 100 picks, you expect them to start at least half of their games of rookie season. So I envision that for Bo. I think there's going to be an injury on this offensive line. Something's going to reshift and reshake, right? Like whether it's a guard getting injured, and now Luminor's playing right guard, and now Bo's at right tackle, or if it's right tackle getting injured and Bo's at right guard, there's going to be a way, I think, that he gets on the field and he ends up making around 8 starts this season. So we've got a couple of not overreactions in the chat. You're saying overreaction. That's fine. I think it's going to be really interesting to see ultimately how that one shakes out, because I really do like Bo as a prospect. But the last one that I have for you, and this one is definitely a steaming hot take, and I don't even believe in this one, but I just wanted to throw it out there anyway. So I'm going to even say overreaction to this. Let me preface it by that. But Jackson Dart will start over 2.5 games this year. Is that an overreaction?
I mean, it depends on how the Giants do. If they're like a 6-win team by like week 15, I think they'll probably just put him in there to start the rest of the season. So I don't think it's even an overreaction. If we're gonna play like the, oh, Jermaine Luminor, there's injuries, Luminor can't play right tackle anymore, he could play this. I think it's also fair to say like the Giants may not be a great football team. They may win like 6 games. And if the Giants are out of playoff contention, then I could totally see Dart starting 3 games at the end of the season, just to see what he has and put some film on the board so we can learn from it going into 2026. I actually don't think that's an overreaction, surprisingly, compared, if we're going to use the same logic as the other one, I don't think it's an overreaction.
Fair enough. I like that. So yeah, I actually had the line originally at 3.5, but since you went overreaction on the first two, I dropped it to 2.5. But yeah, I don't know. I think this is a really fun segment. This is going to be a continuous thing I'm going to try and do like every Monday, in line with the Rich Eisen show. We're going to steal it from them and obviously give them credit every single time, but they're massive. I don't think they care if we steal their Overreaction Monday segment. So I like the Overreaction Monday. Guys, let us know your overreactions that you might have for us in the comment section. Any hot takes that you've got, maybe we'll go ahead and turn them into some sort of a graphic post for our social media, you know, make something fun out of it, and get you guys involved and engaged on our social media channels as well. So make sure you do follow us on all of our social media channels at Fireside Giants. But Alex, before we get out of here, you know, any last minute thoughts as we break down this Giants draft class, give it a grade? You know, how are you feeling coming out of what's been, or what was, a super exciting weekend for the New York Giants?
Just feeling good, man. Just feeling like we have a reason to be optimistic, a reason to be positive, a reason to have faith and even interest in this team. It's been really uninteresting the last couple of years, but I'm really excited to see what this team can do. If this defense can live up to expectations, if Russell Wilson's much better than what we've had over the last couple of years, which I think is true. Can the offensive line stay healthy? Can Brian Daboll coach a good offense? You know, can these guys save their jobs? Like, yeah, I think that they've bought themselves a bit of time, but if they don't win enough football games, I still think they're on the hot seat. So there's a lot of question marks still floating around for this Giants team. There's a lot of concerns, but there is a lot of players, a lot of talent, a lot of upside. So it's an upside game. If the Giants reach their potential, if they play to their upside, they're going to have a really, really enjoyable season. If they don't, it's going to be another disaster. So, you know, I'm tired of being negative, so I'm going to be positive, and I'm going to look at the bright here, and I think there's a lot more positive going for us than negative compared to the last couple seasons. Very, very happy about this draft class, very happy about this free agency haul, and the Giants have set themselves up really nicely financially for the future as well. So right now I'm optimistic, but as Giants fans, my friends, that can change in a blink of an eye. So I'm going to enjoy the time that we have right now being positive and looking towards the light.
No doubt, man. Like I've been saying, I've been way more optimistic about this team than most fans for the majority of the offseason. It's a great change of pace for me, because last year, Alex, I'm not going to lie to you. I was fucking depressed. This team had me miserable. I was apathetic going into the year. I was apathetic when the year began. And when we got to the end of it, I just did not care an ounce. But the signing of a legitimate starting quarterback in Russell Wilson, the drafting of a quarterback who has potential, a landing Abdul Carter, what they did in free agency, everything, the value that they found, I'm feeling optimistic. I know that there's a lot of Giants fans who feel like this is a rebuild year. This team's going to win 4 games because they look at the schedule and they think it's really tough. Schedule that you look at in April, it's not the same schedule that you play in September, October, November. Things change. The NFL is a year-to-year league, and I think that the schedule and how tough it is being overrated by fans. I think the Giants can absolutely go for about 7 wins this year, keep some jobs in place, and then turn it loose with Jackson Dart as their starting quarterback in 2026. Super excited. Absolutely love it. And, you know, looking forward to this season, finally feeling really optimistic and excited for the future. So it's going to be a really fun one, and definitely excited for more live streams and content coming on the channel throughout the rest of this week and throughout the rest of the offseason as we ramp up into training camp in the summer and then preseason and the regular season will be here before you know it. And like I said, Alex, on our live stream the other day, I am so excited for the preseason. Can't wait to watch Jackson Dart play. I think I'm going to go to his first game. I'm really that excited to watch him play for the Giants. So a lot of fun. Another great live stream. Went overtime, big time overtime in this live stream. But thank you all for rocking with us. Hope you did enjoy and hope you enjoy the overreaction segment. We're going to refine that, continue to pump that out through the next Monday live streams and find out the best way to put that together and have some fun on this channel as we get through the offseason, as it's going to start to quiet down and get a little slow going forward. But that doesn't mean we're going to slow down. We're going to keep pumping out all this great content here on Fireside Giants. So make sure to leave a like if you enjoyed, subscribe if you're new, ring the bell so you don't miss an episode, and comment your thoughts down below in the comment section. If you're listening to Apple or Spotify, make sure to leave us a 5-star review and go ahead and follow us on all of our social media channels at Fireside Giants. Without further ado, we'll catch you on the next one. Have a good one and let's go Giants.